Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
When we originally conceived the idea of a show about film music, one of the first names on our guest wish list was Sofia Coppola. I am beyond delighted to say we finally got our girl, with the supremely gifted writer-director joining me on the release of The Beguiled, which won her the Palme d'Or at Cannes. I'm Edith Bowman, and you're listening to Soundtracking, podcast about the sounds of the silver screen. Sofia's pedigree is impeccable. Few directors in the history of cinema have used music more effectively than her father, who instilled in her from a very young age a deep understanding of its potential. This has been reflected in her own work, from the anachronistic punk tracks she deployed in period drama Marie Antoinette to the dreamy electronica that so perfectly fitted the mood of Lost in Translation. Playing now from that film is Alone in Kyoto by Air, who scored The Virgin Suicides. She's also married to Thomas Mars from French band Phoenix, who scored The Beguiled. And it's with The Beguiled that we begin, even though it doesn't feature that much music at all. Sofia Coppola, welcome to Soundtracking. This is a real joy to get you on this show because we're short on women talking about music and film, and there's so many of your great films that we can talk about, but congratulations first of all on The Beguiled.
Thank you.
And weirdly, it's a film that doesn't have much music in it.
Yes, it's true. It's a departure for me.
Sonically, something that I think that is a constant in your films is how sound within film, whether that's music or inconsequential sound, is such an important part, and really essentially is a piece of the puzzle of your films.
Yeah, definitely. I remember my father always saying to me that sound's half the movie. So I really think about that you're more aware of the visuals, but really half of the whole film, it happens in the sound. And I work with a great sound designer, Richard Beggs, who I've worked with on all my films, and just after having worked with him on my first film, I started to think more about that. And when I was writing the script for The Beguiled, I was thinking about the sound as really an element that early on.
The sounds within this film that aren't music based, whether it be, you know, insects or the rustling of leaves or the gunfire in the distance and stuff, it gives you that real sense of being in it.
Oh, good, because yeah, I really wanted you to feel like you're there with them in the south, and the atmosphere and the sense of it, nature outside and the insects and like the cicadas and the heat really feels at that place. And that they're very isolated from the war, but it's in the distance. You hear the cannons in the distance, so you're reminded that it's wartime. And just to feel like what it would feel like to be these women isolated in this house at that time.
It's Martha!
Marie, come with me.
How did he get here?
He was all alone in the woods. I couldn't leave him there to die.
You know you're not supposed to go that far.
Is he dead?
No. Not yet.
But we do still have elements of score that pulsate in and out at points on the film. Because there's very little of it, was that harder to work out when you would need that? And what were the decisions that you made on when you wanted to put that in?
the main thing I was thinking about is I really wanted to have tension, to sustain tension in a way that I've never thought about that before. So, you know, music alleviates tension. And so it just felt like when I started to see the images, when I spoke with the editor, it felt like they were stronger without music and without a score that you're aware of. So I asked Phoenix if they would make some of this kind of electronic tone music that they did some similar music for Somewhere, my film Somewhere, and so that's where I was aware of it. I thought it was something kind of similar to what they did there, but more minimal. And then I sent them images and they would send music back. And then it wasn't until the editing phase that we played around with where it should be and certain scenes we tried it. And then there's a scene where Nicole Kidman's bathing him. It's very, you know, heightened. And we tried music there and it just felt like it made it kind of corny. And and I wanted it to be really uncomfortable. And
yeah.
So that's something that happens in the editing room. And Tamal, my husband, who's in Phoenix, he came and sat with me and the editor. We tried different cues in different places and until you find just what feels like the right balance. And then at the end, we wanted a real song and asked them if they could, you know, do something that was somehow incorporating something classical with a modern approach. And they came up with using Monteverdi, but slowed down 800 times or something. They made this last cue that is, I think, the song that you're most aware of because it's the one that's like played out into a song, and wanted to leave the audience with the feeling, kind of a haunted feeling of the story.
That's really interesting you say about that scene with Nicole when she's bathing Colin's characters, because if you had put music on that, it would have been a completely different emotion. You can feel her kind of uncomfortableness, but almost desire as well in that. And it's so fascinating thinking about if something had also gone on that.
Yeah, when we looked at it with music, it had a whole different feeling and it felt, it just felt cheesy. It felt like it just wasn't the right thing. And then now I love to watch that scene and you're really aware of the sound of the fabric and the water and he feels more there with her and so tense because you see her kind of conflicted.
Is she going to lift the towel? Is she not?
I know. I have friends that are like, couldn't she have just lifted that towel? I should have made an X version.
But we have music within the narrative as well, you know, in terms of their learning instruments and the performance element of that as well, which is a lovely way to incorporate music into the film as well.
Yeah, the songs in the film were songs of that period that they're performing, and I like that it's coming from the characters and in the story as opposed to put on. And that was their form of entertainment in that time, so that was a big night to have around piano, you know, singing for him. And the song Lorena was one that they referenced in the book that was a big hit at that time, but it was a song that both the North and the South loved. So one song they agreed on. A friend of mine played me the Johnny Cash version. That's how I first heard the song. And then it was touching to hear the young actresses singing it.
I'm going
to
dig that version out.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely,
oh,
for sure.
The years creep slowly by Lorena. snow is on the grass again. The sun is sinking low, Lorena. Frost is where the flowers have been. The music's sad and low, Lorena. You'll be in my arms at last.
Music's been a very important part of your filmmaking. Would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. It's a big part, and it's something that I really enjoy about film because I love music. I'm a music fan, and so to be able to use it in my work, because I can't make music, so it's you know, to be able to include music that I love is a big part. I think it adds so much to the atmosphere of a film.
Well, you mentioned your dad earlier there, and you know, in terms of a master of using score but also contemporary music and in such brilliant and powerful ways, yeah. What a great example to have to learn from that, I guess, or witness that as well.
And there's a lot of musicians in my family, so that's something that I didn't get that talent to make it, but there's, you know, an appreciation, and yeah, I definitely saw him doing that, and you know, I always enjoy that aspect of it when you're in the edit and playing around with the music.
Can I kind of talk about a couple of specific bits through other films as well? Like in Virgin Suicides, when they're having that wonderful moment where they're having a conversation over the phone with using the vinyl, which is such a brilliant part of the film.
That was from the book. I thought it was really sweet that that's how they couldn't say what they wanted to say, so they expressed their feelings through their playing music.
Shit, it's them.
To think that only yesterday I was cheerful, bright and gay, looking forward to what wouldn't do the role I was about to play. But in my hour of need, I truly am indeed alone again. Naturally.
Doesn't anybody stay in one place anymore? It would be so fine to see your face at my door. Doesn't help to know you're just far.
I gotta go home. See you later.
See you later.
Within the book, was it specific as to the tracks, or was that something that you kind of explored and worked on, what you wanted them to say, but then what you would use?
Yeah, I don't think that they might have mentioned a few songs, but I remember working with my friend Brian Reitzel, who was the music supervisor. He was a drummer for the band Red Cross that I knew, and he knows a lot about music, so I asked him to help me pick out songs of that period, and we're going through them and, you know, making the conversation. It was a lot of fun to do that.
When you see Lux has been forced to get rid of her, the way she carries record box down the stairs and they fall out, and you get a glimmer of, well, there's the Kiss album, and is there Fleetwood Mac? I mean, were you specific about what was in there? Or was it just, let's just put some vinyl in a box?
You know, that was like the art department picks them, but I can't remember how specific. I mean, I think they had to be what she would have. Yeah. And I think it was funny that, like, of course the mother wouldn't want a Kiss record. Or, you know, like, that was the devil's music.
Well, there's a recurrence of Kiss through a few of your films
as well.
Somewhere, there's a Kiss track in Somewhere, I think, as well.
Oh, really? I never thought about that. I never thought about my connection to Kiss. It must be just like a childhood subconscious connection.
There's obviously a part of you in every one of your films, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I was reading a story about Lost in Translation where the lounge singer that we see in the film, she was actually, is this true? She was
she was a real lounge singer that we saw at the Park Hyatt one night, and I asked my producer if we could try to track her down, and somehow they did. She was based in Australia, and she came back, and I forgot about that. But yeah, I know I saw her one time, and then when I was writing the script, I pictured how just the whole thing of being there was so surreal, and that they're so into jazz music and that kind of hotel singer. And she was a good sport and came back and was in the film.
Do you then specify to her the music you want her to sing?
No, I did. I had that in the script because I don't know if she had actually performed that song or I had thought about it, the Paul Simon song.
Yeah.
I just when you hear those kind of really different versions, it's always kind of surreal.
Are you
thank you. We're glad to be here. We're Sausalito.
And with Lost in Translation, was the music that you used in that quite autobiographical in the sense that the music was?
Yeah, that was the music that I was listening to at that point in my life. And I remember listening to My Bloody Valentine when I was going to art school and trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And, you know, I felt really connected to that at that moment in my life. And of course, it's a classic, but I love their music. Also, I wanted to have that feeling of when you're in Tokyo, you're jet lagged, so it has this kind of dreamy aspect to it. So Brian Reitzel and I worked on that. I worked with him on that soundtrack. He made me these mixes like Tokyo Dream Pop, we called it, and it just had its very specific atmosphere that fit with the look and the colors of the lights of Tokyo at night, and just trying to convey that magical, dreamy jet lag feeling. I remember going there and it just feels like you're on another planet. You're like in Blade Runner. It feels so futuristic.
Yeah.
And it still has that quality.
Things like that as well, when you are using contemporary music and score, is that something you talk about with your music supervisor and your composer in terms of what's right and what's the right fit in certain situations? And because with you it seems like you mainly use contemporary music when it could be there within the narrative, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it's like when it has some connection. I mean, usually it's something I start to think about when I'm writing the script and then, you know, working with the team to help me put it all in place. And like with Marie Antoinette, I was thinking about that period as from growing up as a teenager in the 80s, that I think of 18th century as like new romantic music and Adam Ant videos and, you know, Susie, and like just that culture really embraced that 18th century style. And so I wanted to make it in that feeling. And,
yeah.
And I was inspired by Ken Russell's film of Franz Liszt that was like doing history in a really pop way and in the spirit of these kind of irreverent teenagers. So I automatically thought I want to have that music and I want to have Bow Wow Wow and these bands that I loved and, you know, and that kind of spirit of new romantic teenage-ness. Mixed it up with like a stroke song because it had the feeling of romantic teenage feeling. Yeah. I felt like connected to that. So it's always to support the emotions of the film.
Music as not an inspirational tool, but to take you places and to help form characters.
Yeah, I used to always listen to music a lot when I was writing. When I was first writing Virgin Suicides, I was staying in London and I went to a record store randomly and they had Premier Symptoms Air record and I never heard of him. It was right when that first came out. And I asked the guy at the shop if it was any good and they said, yeah. And I just bought it because I don't know, the cover or something. And, and then I started listening to it when I was writing that script. And I listened to it all the time when I was writing and it really felt like the mood of it. I should talk to them about doing the music. So I contacted them and asked them to do the score. So that's how that came about. And then Brian, he helped me with the 70s music. You know, so it was a blend of score and the music of the period.
Was it a case of, did you send them a script or you just have discussions about the tone or ideas or?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I know I had like a reference book of photo images. I probably showed them, but I sent them clips of scenes and then they sent music back. So kind of like the girls in the,
yeah.
No, but I always feel like I like them to respond to the images. So I sent them scenes and they sent us a bunch of music. And then I worked with Richard Beggs, our sound designer, to work on placing where the music fit.
One of the things you first said about music being so important to the whole picture, that music for Virgin Suicides, The Air did. Even if I hear the music on its own, whether it comes on the radio or whatever, you instantly think of your film. It's,
oh, wow.
They're kind of almost sewn together now, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that was, yeah, they wrote that music for that film, and it, and to me that, yeah, just, it fits so much with the atmosphere and the kind of dreamy look of it. And,
yeah.
And the story, that story was a memory too, so it, I didn't want to just have period music. I wanted to have something that separated a little bit as a memory.
Well, I like how you don't necessarily follow the expectation of that. I mean, Marie Antoinette's a really good example in terms of going against the traditional
type.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, similarly with Begard as well, with the little amount of score that's there, with it being electronic and kind of pulsation and stuff like that. I think it's really important to think like that rather than for it to fit perfectly with the time.
I like the contrast.
Yeah.
How he had Wendy Carlos do the classical music in a modern way through synthesizers. So
yeah.
I love the kind of mix. There's like a friction because they don't really go together. So I wanted something that would support the story and not interrupt it, but it had another quality to it.
Of your
A lot of times when I'm writing, I'll think about the music and, you know, I'll think about what it looks like and what it sounds like and just the that feeling. And this one, I remember when I was writing the script, really wanting to emphasize the real sounds of nature and being cut off from the world and how isolated they were.
And the confidence with this film as well, and not relying on music or needing music so much as well. It's like, it's so powerful.
Powerful
to not use it as to use it sometimes.
Yeah, I thought it was really much stronger and it's very stark and has a really different feeling, so it was interesting to work in that way, which I haven't really before. And the sound department said it was one of their more challenging films because they couldn't hide behind anything, and they had to, we shot in New Orleans in a city, and we had to strip away all the modern sounds of traffic and rebuild all the it sounds very simple, but a lot of work went into it.
It's funny because we've done some lovely interviews for this show, and so many times people will cite Apocalypse Now as being a real, you know, kind of moment in their life where they've suddenly realised the importance and the power of music and in film, and it's wonderful to hear that kind of recurrent thing come back again.
Yeah, I remember seeing it as an adult because I grew up watching it, and then and being so, you know, impressed by that when they did the restored version on a big screen. And Richard Beggs, who worked on that film, was my sound designer, now who I work with now.
Wow.
So he's he's such a hero. But yeah, I love the way they did the music. And I didn't realize my dad recently told me that he composed the music with my grandfather. And then I guess Mickey Hart recorded it electronically with the keyboards. And I was like, where are all those keyboards? But I mean, it has such a great sound. And then the way they used the Doors and everything. That so yeah, maybe I got a gene from my dad. I have it. It's impressive how he uses music. Laughing just at that little scene where he's on the cross trainer.
Oh, that was his idea.
Was it?
Yeah.
just let Bill Murray loose on it. There was like the premise was there, and then he did that whole thing. It's so fun to watch him.
What about the karaoke within Lost in Translation as well?
Yeah, that I remember in my 20s when I would go to Japan. I did work there as a photographer and different things. And I remember for business, the host sometimes would take you out to karaoke, and there were like wigs and costumes, and everyone would drink a lot of sake. And I have lots of fun memories of karaoke. So that I wanted to show all the experiences of being in Tokyo. And then I love Bill Murray when he sings. He's so heartfelt to me.
Yeah.
And I guess I remember him from SNL doing his Lounge Singer. So. I just always love to find any occasion to make Bill sing.
Did he get to pick the songs that he sung, or was that?
No, it was fun because I got to request.
Great.
I got to make requests, and I love Brian Ferry, so I was happy that he sang More Than This.
Yeah,
that was the one, right? Yeah, and it's just so touching how he can be silly, but then switch to sincere and heartfelt.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Bob Harris.
Thanks. This is hard. I could feel at the time there was no way of knowing. Fallen leaves in the night, who can say where they're blowing? As free as the wind, hopefully learning why the sea on the tide has no way of turning. More than this, you know there's nothing. More than this, tell me one thing. More than this,
is it a reflection of your karaoke choices too?
I think they're just songs that I like. I am a really bad singer. I can't sing. So my karaoke song.
It's karaoke. No one's supposed to be able to sing.
I know, but yeah, my karaoke song is Cherry Bomb.
Great.
By the Runaways. That's my. Because you can kind of shout it.
That's a good way of getting around it.
Yeah.
Congratulations on the response and the accolades as well so far. I expect there's a lot more to come as well.
Oh,
it must have been a wonderful thing to with Cannes.
Yeah, it was a big thrill and a surprise. And yeah, it's, you know, you're in this little bubble of just making a movie that you want to see. And it's always just a thrill when other people can connect to it.
Listen, thank you so much for your time. It's an absolute pleasure. And I look forward to whatever is next, whenever it may be.
Thank
have a good
you.
Break.
It was really fun. Thank you. It was fun talking to you.
Thanks, Sophia. Thank you.
Bye.
Mia Coppola's karaoke song. That's the wonderful Cherry Bomb by The Runaways, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtracking. A thousand thank yous to Sophia for taking the time to talk to us. From my point of view, something of a dream come true, to be honest. The Beguiled is on general release around the world now and is well worthy of the accolades and awards it's been receiving. You can find a full track list for the show via edithbowman.com, where you can also subscribe to this podcast and catch up with all of our previous episodes. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtracking UK. And please do tell your friends about us if you like what you hear. We'll be back next week exploring more stories and sounds from music in cinema. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
You want your child to thrive and reach their full potential. K-12 can help them get there. K-12 powered schools are tuition-free, accredited online public schools for students in kindergarten through 12th grade. This is not your typical homeschooling. With state-certified teachers specially trained to teach online, your child will learn at their speed, at home, with innovative, engaging technology. Join the more than 3 million families who've chosen K-12. Go to k12.com/podcast to enroll today.